What does it take to lead a nation that never chose you? In August 1974, Gerald Ford became the only American president never elected to either the presidency or vice presidency. He inherited a country poisoned by political scandal, reeling from economic crisis, and watching its global influence crumble in real time. No inaugural parade, no electoral mandate, no honeymoon period. Just the wreckage of waterfall and a nation's shattered faith in its institutions. Yet this unassuming former football player from Michigan would guide America through one of its darkest hours with a steady hand and moral clarity that cost him everything politically, but earned him history's redemption. His story reveals a profound truth. Sometimes the leaders we need aren't the ones we choose, and the decisions that define greatness are precisely those that destroy popularity. Gerald Ford's origin story reads like a novel. Born Leslie King Jr. in 1913, his first weeks were marked by violence. His biological father once threatened him and his mother Dorothy with a butcher knife. At 16 days old, he became a refugee from domestic abuse, fleeing with his mother to Grand Rapids, Michigan. There, Dorothy married Gerald Ford Sr., a paint salesman whose decency would reshape the boy's destiny. Young Leslie became Jerry Ford, inheriting not just a new name, but a new model of manhood. Ford inherited his biological father's volcanic temper, but through his mother's patient guidance and his stepfather's example, he learned to master that rage, though White House insiders would later notice a telltale red flush creeping above his collar when provoked. The Depression cemented his values. When his stepfather's paint company launched weeks before the 1929 crash, Gerald Sr. kept every worker employed at $5 weekly, the same he paid himself, promising to make up the difference when times improved. Young Jerry contributed by working multiple jobs, learning that character meant keeping your word even when it hurt. A pivotal encounter came when Leslie King unexpectedly appeared at the burger joint where teenage Jerry worked. Over an awkward lunch, King boasted about his Wyoming ranch while conveniently forgetting years of unpaid child support. He handed Jerry $25 and left. That night, Jerry cried himself to sleep. The next day, he spent $13 of that money on golf knickers, a small act of defiance revealing his determination to distinguish himself from the man who abandoned him. At the University of Michigan, Ford excelled at football while working his way through college alongside roommate Willis Ward, a talented black athlete. When Michigan traveled to play Georgia Tech in Ford's senior year, the Southern school demanded Ward be benched or they wouldn't play. Ford considered quitting, but was urged to play by his stepfather and Ward himself, a decision that haunted him for years. During the muddy contest, he and teammate Bill Borgman delivered a vicious hit to a Georgia Tech player who had used a racial slur, sending him off on a stretcher. "That one was for you," Ford told Ward after Michigan's victory. It was an imperfect response to an impossible situation, the kind of moral compromise that would mark his political career. World War II transformed Ford from a Yale law student into a naval officer aboard the USS Monterey. In December 1944, Typhoon Cobra nearly swept him overboard, saved only by hitting a 2-inch rail and twisting into a catwalk. The Monterey survived despite losing half its aircraft, and Ford emerged with 8 battle stars. These experiences taught him that leadership often means choosing between imperfect options, and that life's fragility demands humility rather than arrogance. Ford never planned to be president. His original ambition was a judgeship in Kent County, Michigan. When a rival claimed that position in 1947, he challenged Bartell Jonkman, a Ford-term isolationist congressman. Ford's $7,000 campaign relied on personal contact, working factory gates at dawn, attending Kiwanis lunches, visiting farms. On October 15, 1948, Jerry and Betty married. He arrived slightly late, wearing mismatched shoes, having come directly from campaigning. Their honeymoon consisted of a Michigan football game in a Thomas Dewey rally. Betty was learning what Jerry's sister-in-law had warned. Jerry's mistress will not be a woman. It will be his work. In Congress, Ford built respect through independence and integrity. When freshman Democrat Lee Hamilton made a parliamentary mistake, Ford quietly arranged for a Republican colleague to help him correct it. This relationship building proved essential when Nixon's presidency collapsed. After Spiro Agnew resigned over corruption in October 1973, Nixon needed a vice president confirmable by a Democratic Congress. Ford fit perfectly, respected, confirmable, and, Nixon believed, not a threat to his preferred 1976 successor, John Connally. The Senate approved Ford 97-3. The House followed 387-35. As Watergate intensified, Ford was sidelined. The White House scheduled distant speeches without consultation, providing last-minute pro-Nixon drafts. When Ford suggested compromise on Meet the Press, Nixon's spokesman immediately disowned his comments. Behind the scenes, Ford quietly brought trusted law partner Phil Buchan to Washington, insurance against whatever might come. On August 1, 1974, the smoking gun tape revealed Nixon had ordered the CIA to block the FBI's Watergate investigation. Ford immediately distanced himself. "The public interest is no longer served by repetition of my previously expressed belief in Nixon's innocence." 8 days later, Nixon resigned. Ford became the 38th president, declaring, "Our long national nightmare is over." 1 month later, Ford pardoned Nixon for national healing. The reaction was catastrophic. His approval rating plunged from 71% to 49% overnight, the largest drop ever recorded. His press secretary resigned in protest. The pardon would haunt his presidency and likely cost him the 1976 election. What Ford didn't know, Special Prosecutor Leon Jaworski had never intended to put Nixon on trial, a fact he only confided before his 1982 death. The pardon saved Jaworski from revealing his hesitation, but destroyed Ford's political future. He had made the right decision for the wrong reasons, based on incomplete information, and paid the full price. Ford's 895 days in office were relentless. He inherited an economy with interest rates topping 10% and a stock market that had lost half its value. South Vietnam collapsed despite his pleas for aid, with desperate Vietnamese scaling embassy walls as helicopters evacuated. In September 1975, Lynette "Squeaky" Frome, a Charles Manson follower, pointed a gun at Ford in Sacramento. Only Secret Service agent Larry Buendorf's intervention prevented assassination. 2 weeks later, Sarah Jane Moore fired at Ford in San Francisco, missing only because Vietnam veteran Oliver Sipple deflected her arm. Sipple's reward was having his homosexuality exposed by the press, leading to family rejection and eventual lonely death. Ford's letter of gratitude still framed on his wall. Yet Ford's greatest achievements attracted least attention. He pioneered deregulation, questioning why phone rates needed government approval and challenging the Interstate Commerce Commission's existence. Rather than nationalizing failing railroads, he created Conrail with pricing flexibility, the first transportation deregulation law. His initiatives led to airline deregulation and eventual abolishment of both the CAB and ICC, saving consumers billions. The Helsinki Accords, initially criticized as legitimizing Soviet control, became crucial to Cold War victory by establishing human rights standards the Soviets couldn't meet. His Africa policy committed America to ending white minority rule in Rhodesia and laid groundwork for ending South African apartheid. None of this made headlines, but all shaped the world we inherited. Ford lost the 1976 nomination to Reagan, then the general election to Carter by 2 percentage points. Betty founded the Betty Ford Center after her 1978 addiction crisis. Ford and Carter became genuine friends after Anwar Sadat's 1981 funeral, with Ford admitting, "I misjudged him." As Republicans moved rightward, Ford grew isolated. He and Betty championed the Equal Rights Amendment, reproductive freedom, and same-sex marriage. When asked what quality would most disable a president, he answered, "Arrogance. That's a terrible characteristic. If you had an arrogant president, and I mean in a vicious way, God help the country." Ford died December 26, 2006, surrounded by family. Betty left Christmas lights on so Jerry would know she was okay from above. Time vindicated his pardon and economic policies. Ford's presidency offers an alternative vision: leadership rooted in humility, solving problems over scoring points, doing what's right despite the cost. He was the man nobody voted for who saved democracy when it needed saving most. His legacy challenges us to value decency over charisma, integrity over ideology, and the courage to make unpopular decisions. Unassuming statesmanship that feels less like history and more like a desperately needed roadmap.